Welcome to a brand new episode of the Z2 Podcast, where three friends morph together to fight the great Kamen Riders. As always, I'm Captain Marvelous Zach.
I'm the GoBuster Steven.
I'm the Optimus Prime looking Kamen Rider Zach.
I just straight up gave you a thing and you had to go and change to Optimus Prime.
What? Doesn't look like Optimus Prime. He has a barcode for a face.
You even said last night, it's like, oh, look, it's Optimus Prime.
Just vaguely. So last night, Steve and I were just watching random Power Rangers / Super Sentai videos because we saw the announcement for Power Rangers Hyper Force, which we'll get into. But we started watching the Gokai Ranger, Go Buster crossover with Kamen Rider.
It was Super Sentai Kamen Rider.
Versus.
No, Cross.
Okay. All we know is that they were killing each other for no reason.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I watched like 15 people die in approximately 2 minutes.
Look, they didn't die.
They disappeared into a purple flame, and we need to finish
after a massive explosion.
Well, no, it's like their swords glowed, and they slashed, and then they just disappeared. And then Captain Marvelous was like, it is my duty to kill all the Kamen Riders. And we're like, oh, shit. Gokai change.
Well, no, because the beginning started off with Captain Marvelous saying, I'm going to kill all them.
Throwing me off so much that it's actually called Captain Marvelist.
Yeah, his name
Marvelous.
Is Marvelous.
Oh, Marvelous.
Yeah, he's Captain Marvelous because he's so marvelous.
Someone's going to like hear this moment was like, what? When did Captain Marvel blow up people like that?
But it started off with Captain Marvelous taking down Kamen Riders. And then Kamen Rider Decade shows up. Marvelous tells him he's going to take care of all of the Kamen Riders.
Was that the Optimus Prime one?
That
the
was...
gun?
No.
Who's the one that had the gun that I saw?
I can't remember which Kamen Rider that was. But
look out, everyone. He has a gun.
There was Barcode Face, but there was Red Barcode Face. And he said he's going to take down all the Sentai because Marvel has taken down all the Kamen Riders.
Yep. Huh.
So it's, I'm going to kill your people because you kill my people, and then I'm going to kill your people because you kill my people.
And then there's a third party of, like, evil Kamen Rider who's able to do essentially a Gokai change into other Kamen Riders.
Yeah, that's Decade.
Okay. Right. Neat. He's one of the only ones that had a name.
So neat.
Well, they all had names. They just didn't really throw them out there. Like, Kamen Rider, ooh.
Yeah.
Which is actually his season, was Kamen Rider 000.
Yep.
So he's Kamen Rider, ooh.
So,
Does it make you go, ooh?
Hopefully. So it was really interesting, and I mean, Super Sentai is awesome. Everyone that walked into our house last night is like, oh, you're watching Power Rangers. It's like, kinda.
Sort of.
Wow, they really have hair, and it's like, yeah.
Yeah. And Jim's comment was, my God, they're so emo. You're not wrong.
A lot of them were very androgynous. I'm like, wait, is that a
well, they're
supposed
the
I can't tell.
Gokai Rangers, the Gokaiger. They're aliens that look like Asian people.
Okay,
they're space pirates.
Okay,
they're great. They're actually like one of the best Sentai series.
Oh, that make Kami make it makes so much more sense now because you're like, why is he upset about treasure? He's a goddamn space pirate.
Yeah. They're space pirates.
All right,
that everything makes sense now.
The Blue Ranger had
what
so
have
many
I been
zippers
doing with my life.
To move forward, Twitch and Hyper RPG are teaming up together to make a new tabletop live stream featuring a new cast of Rangers called Power Rangers Hyper Force, which takes place in the canon of Time Force.
Was this announced at TwitchCon?
This was announced last week, actually. Oh. So the Rangers will consist of Marvin, Eddie, Chloe, Vesper, and Jack. Marvin the Red Ranger will be played by Peter Sudarso, the Blue Ranger from Ninja Steel, who's actually like a huge Sentai nerd. Like, he was able to meet his Sentai counterpart and they did like a photo thing together, and he actually voices the dub of his Sentai counterpart, which is really cool.
Neat.
Eddie the Blue Ranger will be played by Andre, a Black Nerd Comedy. Chloe the Pink Ranger will be played by Megan Camarina, who we know as Strawberry 17, a social media influencer, while Polly Schreier will play Jack the Yellow Ranger. He's also known as Bulk from Power Rangers.
He's known as Bulk and did writing on the show.
Yep. And then rounding out the cast is Christina V, who will play Vesper the Black Ranger. And she's also a social media influencer.
Whoa. A female Black Ranger. What?
What?
All of the Rangers are going to be based on Greek mythology. So the Red Ranger is
what?
Iapetus, So there's Zords, there's the Lion, Oceanus the Serpent, Hyperion the Phoenix, and then Black Ranger Coeus the Cerberus, and the Yellow Ranger Creus the Ram.
That sounds fucking dope.
Yeah, and Gil the Vlogsmith actually like handcrafted the dice for the series, which are really cool, and you can check that on his Twitter. And to top it off, we have, they showed the theme song for it, and then, like I said, the series takes place in the year 3016 at the Time Force Academy. A team of Time Force Ranger cadets must band together to defeat an ancient evil who is set on unraveling the very fabric of the universe. Under the leadership of their mentor, Jen Scott, who was the original Time Force Pink Ranger.
We're actually having her actress come back as a guest star.
Yep. And you have Game Master Malika Lim. The newly minted Rangers will cross both time and space to complete their mission while running into familiar eras and faces along the way. So Saban is actually producing this show with Twitch and Hyper RPG. And then they're going to bring old Rangers back to do like crossover stuff.
So how long until they run into Tommy?
Season finale.
And will it be normal Tommy or Dr. Tommy Oliver?
Or Dr. Draken?
Tommy wasn't. Well, you mean Lord Draken?
Lord Draken. He could be a Dr. Draken.
Lord Draken, PhD.
Dr. Draken and Mr. Hyde.
So what's really cool is this series hasn't even started yet. It's going to be debuting on October 24th on Twitch at 6 p.m. Pacific time.
Tuesday.
What was the thing that just like blew up D&D campaigns online?
We were talking about this. Everybody, I think it was Critical Role.
I think Critical Role, them being on Geek & Sundry...
Did Critical Role start when Geek & Sundry got that YouTube funding?
I don't know. I thought Critical Role started Geek & Sundry.
Geek & Sundry was around because they had Tabletop. And
okay.
It was Felicia Day's baby. And then...
Now it's just a massive...
It's still Felicia
Day's
baby.
It's like Rooster Teeth, essentially. Right. They just own a bunch of different properties. When did it start? Tell me when you started.
So the Rangers season original release 2015 too. Like they're nice and sleek.
I didn't know they had images of the Ranger suits.
No, Critical Role officially started in 2015, but Geek & Sundry was launched in 2012, so. I don't know. I would say yes, like the high production value of Critical Role, even though it's mostly just two camera angles the whole time.
One on Mercer. That's right.
I was going to say they have the cast.
They have the top-down view sometimes.
Oh, yeah. They have the view of Mercer's board.
Yeah.
When he puts the game mat down, and that has two different angles. So five cameras. Six, if you go off the last episode, because they had one where they like did a shot out of the table that they all sit at in like a nice black and white.
And to be perfectly honest, I'd blame Walking Dead. Not necessarily blame, but like Walking Dead and Game of Thrones kind of kicked off this whole facet of nerd culture becoming cool and people becoming really interested in these things, or at least more openly so. Like, if you think about it, once those things became the norm, it's like, you know, you'd walk into a comic book shop and there'd just be people there for the first time. It's like, yeah, we just got out of this Thor movie. It was really interesting. And what would you have us read? And it's like, Jason Aaron's run, everything. Start there. Well,
you have like 5 years of stuff to read. Yeah, have fun.
I think just all of the wave of nerd culture got that started because a lot of people, like when all these D&D shows have like guest stars on, they're like, yeah, I've always wanted to do like RPG stuff, but I've just never found the outlet, or some people have even had the guts to do it. Like, I've always been that guy who you go into a nerd shop, you see like they're every now and again, there'll be a tabletop section over there. Like, I want to go check it out, but nah. There was always like the stigmata of being, or not the stigmata, the stigma. I don't know why I keep going to stigmata.
Stigmata.
Which is Jesus's. But there's always been the stigma of being a nerd.
I just accepted it early on.
Yeah, I always accepted it, but it wasn't like to the level of, I'm going to go play some D&D. Play some Dungeons and Dragons.
And I played WoW. It's essentially the same.
But WoW is you on a computer, not you in a public space.
And when you roleplay in WoW, it's mostly sex.
Yeah, I mean, there's actual roleplaying servers. where you actually have to be like in character the whole time, otherwise you get kicked from it.
I did that even on a GTA server, and that was really fun. But like, I got to be a cop.
Like vanilla WoW servers, the role-playing was done for you.
Your character. Well, no, there's always, like specifically...
Well,
like,
yeah, I know, but like even just basic WoW and RPGs, all of the role-playing is done for you. It's already been written out. It's already been voice-acted. You just click on what you want them to say. Whereas D&D and other tabletop things, you have to actually do the thinking and acting.
We had
for
such
yourself.
Great D&D.
Shout
last
out to
night.
Jim last night. Like, he killed it. Like, I'm so glad that he took my, like, no fucking metagaming, get in character comment from the night before, and he just went
Which
with it.
My comment
well, it
for
was
so, long,
so wonderful.
Cool. Listen like, to Zach, not Steven. That's fine.
Well, you know,
just
Steven's
like brunch
right.
at the Alamo. Don't listen to Steven.
Well, it's like Steve is always, his character is, if you look at his character sheet, he is this quiet, laid-back character that only pipes in every so often. And then we finally have our rogue character being like, let's do something sneaky. Let's just fucking walk through the middle of the gates, which I was like,
what if I
trying to lead
them?
You guys into doing that. And it's like, well, can we go around? I'm like, yeah, there's slopes you can climb up.
Which again, you're the whole reason that I was like, he wants us to go through the front gate. He's given me an idea. I'll just throw that breadcrumb out there.
And, you know, to be perfectly honest, you guys didn't even need to have Zach be a prisoner. You could have just walked through.
Yeah, I mean...
And then Zach taking advantage of the DM notes, he messages me, can I start some shit and then meet up with the party? I'm like, no, you can't. You're going to start some shit.
No, I asked him, like, is this how these things work? I want to start some shit while they're off doing whatever, and then that's what triggers the whole thing.
Yeah, and like I said, I like playing... our D&D with like a more comedic undertone. Like there are serious things going on and battles are very serious, but I just love the NPCs being like just totally oblivious to everything and just making side comments.
The subplot of
the schlong.
Nyx's schlong.
And Nyx's gender.
Nyx the schlong.
It's great.
Oh man.
Yeah. It was tons of fun last night. And then even, just with the rest of our party playing up everything.
Boss fight too.
It's like, let's just light the camp on fire. I'm like, you could just fucking walk to the tents. Just walk. It's
I know
like,
the whole
let's
time.
Let's cause a distraction. I'm like, oh my God.
I know
what?
The whole
Fine.
Time.
I give up.
The whole time I'm fucking tied in a tent, I'm like, I can't
okay.
say anything right
you
now.
You also did have one of the guards say, you'll be shot on sight if you walk to the tent.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, so us being like, we need a distraction. It's like, what else would we do? Walk to the tent. Shot on sight.
It's like, let's set all the prisoners free and have the guard drakes track them down. I'm like, or you could just take the fucking prisoners with you and goddamn protect them. I'm surprised no one's actually died yet. This is a miracle, to be perfectly honest. And then just because of the freaking marching order or the initiative order, I was like, oh, this dragon's going to fuck some people up. The dragon didn't even get to hit anyone.
I walked in at the very end and just crit him.
I was
going to
say,
death.
It started off with me doing half of its health in one arrow shot.
And then I walk in after I'm finally broken free of chains. I'm like, ah, oh, it's my time.
See, I did half. Kelsey did almost a half. And then Zach finished it off.
Yeah. And
so it was like, yeah, a dragon. Shit, this is going to take a while. Well, I guess I'll use a spell. Oh, he's dead already?
It also helps that I learned that I can hold my hammer two-handed and get extra damage
I was honestly going to wait until you... I wasn't going to say anything.
Well, I just had the weapons page open because you asked for it. I was like, oh, my hammer
it's
has...
It's the same thing with your danger property. Sense. You have advantage on dexterity saving throws, and you just always forget that you have it.
Fuck.
Dexterity throws as
well,
in
it doesn't
stealth.
Say anything about like what bonus I get. I think I just as get an extra roll. I think
you have advantage on dexterity saving throws.
So
okay,
two rolls takes
rolls.
The highest,
okay.
yep. which you could use
Fuck,
on fucking stealth checks.
So many goddamn times.
What? Everyone passed their stealth check? Zach, what'd you roll? 9.
No, it was worse. It was a 2. It was a 2.
But I mean, it's now a running thing that he fucks the party. You guys can't be stealthy.
Yep.
Like face this planning into a bridge on day one.
Yep. Like I said, I wrote 2 paragraphs for last night. And just, like, have some random NPC dialogue. And I was going to be like, just do it during midday. Don't scout the camp in the day and then go try and go in at night. It'll make it much harder and you'll be more suspicious. Just walk in.
I did find it funny that you pointed out, like, there's a guard tower with a light. I'm like, can we take out the light? It's like, it's the middle of the day. It doesn't matter.
It's 12 o'clock.
It's like, why is it lit then?
No, it has a light. It wasn't lit.
Oh. You made it seem like it was lit.
You did make a big deal about the spotlight.
Yeah.
Like, and there's a spotlight. It's midday.
Well, no, it was Jim who was like, how do they have this technology? I'm like, it's fucking magic, Jim.
See, mine was more science. Torch, reflective glass, beep, spotlight.
We have ravens that deliver instant messages. Speaking of instant messaging and things that are pretty lit, CW is developing another superhero property, Project 13.
Is this Gen 13 possibly?
No.
Oh, boo.
So DC's Doctor 13 is in development for television at the CW with Elizabeth Banks attached to executive produce. The series, reportedly titled Project 13, would focus on Tracy 13 and her father, Terrence 13, who investigate unexplained phenomena. So it's unclear whether or not the show's going to be connected to the rest of the DC universe or CW DC universe, but it's them. It's almost reminds me essentially of like,
it sounds more like something that Supernatural would.
Yeah, it's like a Supernatural, more X-Files-y kind of show.
Oh, shit. Did you see
the
crossover that Supernatural is doing this season?
No.
They're teaming up with goddamn Scooby-Doo. They're doing an animated episode with a Scooby-Doo adventure.
Like, is Scooby and the gang going to be there?
Yeah, actual Scooby fucking do.
Who's going to die? Velma, no.
Jinkies.
It's like that Robot Chicken episode where the Scooby gang goes to Crystal Lake.
Yeah. That was more the one with Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Oh, I don't remember that one.
Yeah, they did like a mystery with the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and I think Velma died, and then I can't remember the girl from the book.
I don't know.
Dragon Tattoo Girl.
The girl with the dragon tattoo? Is she also the one who kicked the hornet's nest?
And Daphne make out, and that's pretty much the end of it.
Huh. Alrighty, man. Speaking of making out and love, we have more detail on Flash War that was announced at New York Comic Con. So Flash War details hint at Wally's pre-Flashpoint past. So the war between Barry Allen and Wally West will begin in January with the Flash annual from writer Joshua Williamson.
Wait. Which Wally?
Ginger Wally. Strawberry Wally.
OG Wally.
Yeah. So the story will set the stage
when
for...
There's two Wallys now.
Well, there's Strawberry Wally and Chocolate Wally.
Okay. Which Chocolate Wally would get his ass handed to him by Barry if he tried to start a war.
Yeah. So it sets the stage for the 2018 Flash stories, and it's the whole idea about which Flash is really the best. So the story centers around Wally West, who's conflicted over whether to let Iris West know he is alive. But when Magenta, Wally's old love, needs his help, he returns to Keystone City to be confronted with the violent memories of an unknown world. So it seems like we're finally getting more of that connective tissue between everything with the Manhattan storyline. And I mean, Williamson, he's been connected to just about every event since he got signed by DC.
I honestly didn't expect him to stay on Flash for so long. Like, not that he would, like, get dropped or anything, but that he'd be, like, his story had a finite endpoint of what he wanted to tell.
Mm-hmm. And it's, like, I mean, when they announced him at WonderCon, when the whole Rebirth thing started, I'm like, Williamson, the guy who writes, like, Birthright and all those Horror Image titles, what is he going to do on Flash? And then, like, the whole Godspeed arc, like, oh, my God.
Very dark Flash stories.
Yeah.
As if they didn't exist already.
I mean, Barry Allen just has a fucked up life.
I mean, the current Flash arc is dark
and we
as
got,
shit.
Yeah, freaking yeah. Mina.
With the negative
comes,
Flash.
Yeah, and Mina comes back again, finally.
I mean, and then Williamson taking, like, almost the lead role in writing The Button with Tom King. Button. And now he's teaming up with Snyder on the... Dark Knight's Metal, the newest issue that is coming out. So it's like, this guy has such... He's just one of those writers that's like one in a million just came on board at DC and just like hit the ground running, literally.
Great shot, but kid. One in a million.
So he's... I mean, he wrote Red Death. He's going to be writing chapters in The Bats Out of Hell. And now we get this really cool annual that just starts off this next arc. And it all starts when Wally West returns to Keystone. And I'm like, oh, shit, is he going to run into his parents of all people? Like, I'm just wondering, because we haven't seen Keystone City at all.
Well, yeah, that's very possible. That would be pretty neat. I mean, he's already had to deal with Linda not remembering him. What about his fucking parents that don't even know he exists? Like, that'd be a...
Well, if you think about it...
Storyline to read.
Young Justice did a great job showing that his parents love him and care about him.
Mm-hmm.
In the actual comic books, his dad was emotionally abusive. he sold out the superheroes to the Reach during that whole story arc that the second season of Young Justice is based on. And, like, really, Wally was raised by Iris, kind of like how Chocolate Wally is right now, mm-hmm. and Barry. So, you know, it only made sense that he's having, like, such conflicted emotions about whether or not he should reveal himself to Iris.
Now that you tell me this, that actually makes, like, the whole Chocolate Wally being raised by Iris thing, like, even more... God, that even makes it, like, the parallels even more confusing. Like, especially, yep. like, since part of the Rebirth story was, like, there's now two Wally Wests? What the fuck's going on anymore? Like, this seems like an anomaly in the timeline.
Well, no, it's like, oh, this is from the maternal side of the family, and this is the paternal side of the family. Like, Iris's brother is Chocolate Wally's father.
Yeah, I mean, I get all that, but, like, what if it was intentionally meant to be a parallel?
Yeah, it's really interesting, considering, you know, like, Chocolate Wally's dad was the Reverse Flash for a while, too.
Yeah.
So, a lot of connected tissue. And at the same time, Bleeding Cool is speculating that Superwoman is going to be the first series axed in the Rebirth banner. And to be perfectly honest, I'm surprised.
It's gone on longer than we all expected, so.
Yeah, I thought once Superman Reborn ended, the series would eventually come to an end itself. But it's interesting. I mean, like, 18 issues to be considered canceled, because back in the New 52, the series got canceled at issue 3.
Yeah, was this a monthly book as well?
It was a monthly.
So, I mean, it got a year and a half. That's pretty good.
Yeah, and the next one that seems like it's going to be on the chopping block is Blue Beetle. Mm. Keith Giffen's just left the title, too, to work on another project that he hasn't announced yet. So, it's really interesting. And, I mean, like, New Superman is in the low sales numbers, but it's still returning, kind of like how over at Marvel they keep Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur in America, because it's reaching like a specific niche audience. And I was talking to someone online at HOJ the other day. I'm like, right now there are 3 Asian superheroes in comics. And it's like, I'm taking what I can get. Because you have New Superman, you have Orphan, and you have the Atom. And then if you look at Marvel, you have Jubilee. Yeah.
Damn. Silks doesn't exist anymore. Like, hasn't even appeared in another book. She's just...
No, she's working for S.H.I.E.L.D. now. She's all behind the scenes.
Yeah, where was she during all the Secret Empire stuff? Oh, not important.
Well, S.H.I.E.L.D. was infiltrated by Hydra.
Again, where the fuck was she the whole time?
Who knows? And it's like, I'm really glad to see New Superman stay around, because when we were at Animal City, I got to talk to Gene Luen Yang. I'm like, this book means a lot to me. Thank you so much for making it. I'm not Chinese descent, mm-hmm. but like, it's so cool just to see this as a mainstay book. And he's like, oh,
you think maybe it's just DC trying to keep that not really push for diversity, but just keep realizing how important the book is, even though it is that niche audience.
I mean, it's the same thing with Omega Man.
Yeah.
Like, man, got canceled after 6 issues.
I wonder how Mr. Miracle's doing. Because, I mean, critically, it seems like it's doing amazing.
Number three on the top 10 for Bleeding Cool this past 2 weeks.
Good.
And it was just underneath The Drowned and Batman. I mean, like, well, Tom King.
So, I was talking to John about it, and I was like, dude, we're only on issue 3. Like, what the fuck? This book is so intense already. Like, we're a quarter of the way through this thing.
It reminds me of Vision. Like, it's the master of the 12-issue story arc.
Yeah, but I feel like Vision, it was very contained in terms of what they were telling. This is, like, a grander... There's so much happened in the last 3 issues compared to what happened in Vision.
You're right. I'm excited.
Just like, what the fuck?
This is, and like Tom King said, it's essentially New Gods Rebirth.
I'm like, which is awesome.
Let's bring back the Kirby. Let's go. All right.
It's prepping for that doomsday clock.
Steve, this one's for you. Snagglepuss comic is coming out in January.
Is it finally coming out?
It's finally coming out. Mark Russell makes his return.
He still has to be
Snagglepuss,
the foppishly gay playwright.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, like...
Yeah, this is the book that everybody got upset about. I was like, oh, they're making him gay? It's like, come on.
Have you watched Snagglepuss
of all people?
And it's funny because So it's called Exit Stage Left, The Snagglepuss Chronicles. And it presents Snagglepuss as a gay Southern playwright in the style of Tennessee Williams. And Russell says that the creation of him came by accident. I was tweeting just funny lines I thought Snagglepuss would say if he was Tennessee Williams, some kind of Southern Gothic playwright. And Marie Javens, my editor, thought they were funny and talked to Dan Didio about turning that into a comic. That's how it started. It was really just funny tweets, and it just ballooned from there. This is the same guy that turned the Flintstones into, like,
oh my God,
a politically charged man. Social commentary. And I'm like,
PTSD.
He's so great. Like, when they announced Hanna-Barbera was coming back to DC, I'm like, this is stupid. No one's going to read this. I read all first 12 issues of Future Quest. I want to pick up Scooby Apocalypse in trade. I'm like, this is so crazy. This is so cool. I can't believe this is happening. And it's a very Snagglepuss, weird twist. Come on.
I'll be curious to see how well that one does. Like, because that seems like a very, like...
It's a very niche.
Not even niche, just very bizarre. I wonder how many people are going to pick it up just for the sheer fact of the insanity of it.
I mean, look at Flintstones. Flintstones went crazy. And then now we have Jetsons coming out with Jimmy Palmiotti writing.
Ooh, I can't wait. I might consider that one.
Yeah.
Because Jetsons just... I'd be very curious to see what they do with that. Like, do they go for a more humorous thing, or do they, like, bring in some technological dystopia kind of thing?
Well, crap, what was the robot's name? Rosie is...
I was going to say Betty, but yeah, Rosie.
Rosie is George's mother. Like, she died in the first six pages and then was transferred to being Rosie the Robot.
Whoa.
Is that actually confirmed, or is that your theory?
No, that's in the preview. What the fuck? I think it was when they did, like, the one-shots for Hanna-Barbera that did, like, the crossovers.
See, I'm expecting... Like you said, kind of like a dystopian future sort of thing where not everyone lives in the clouds.
There's give me Cyberpunk Jetsons. City. Give it to me.
I'm just sitting. It's Jimmy Palmiotti. I mean, this guy's famous for Harley Quinn. I know, he's famous more for humor. Well, no, he did the con job for Boom, which was a heist at Comic-Con. And he also did. He was on Jonah Hex for the longest time.
Was he really?
Yeah. Like, a lot of people only see him and Amanda Connor as these comedy humor people. And that was just because they were on Harley Quinn for, like, ever.
6 years.
Yeah. I mean, when they relaunched her book in the New 52, yeah, they were on Harley Quinn for a long time. But Palmiotti writes really solid story arcs. And I'm really excited to see what he does. Yeah. I'll pick up the first issue for sure.
Yeah, I'll give it a shot. But I like your idea, Steve. Perfect setup for a cyberpunk dystopian Jetsons book.
You think everyone can live up in the clouds? No.
I really want to read Snagglepuss, though, because it's also talking about the Red Scare.
Oh, my God. In the South. Oh, my God.
With a foppishly gay pink cat.
Snagglepuss in this story is going to have to live a double life as a gay playwright living in New York, and he's closeted. But he has values and integrity as an artist, and he's trying to stand up for the people who otherwise should be shoved under the stairs in this time of great national paranoia and the Red Scare mentality.
Can you see that? That right there kind of pushed me back a little bit. Snagglepuss should not be in the closet.
But when is this book taking place? Like the 50s then?
1953.
Okay, that makes more sense.
But it's Snagglepuss.
Sure.
Snagglepuss has never been in the closet.
But it's no, also that thing. People were up in arms, and it's like, how dare they turn this character gay? I'm like, well, Snagglepuss. I mean,
heavens to Murgatroyd. It's like, you're going to tell me that's not even the slightest bit
You have
bit
a problem
gay.
With that. That.
If you want to take up the next topic, I want to look up this Jetsons thing.
Okay.
I got to bounce.
Okay, bye, Steve. All right.
Should we start talking about shit about Steve now?
While he's still in the room?
Yeah. You've already muted his mic. It's perfect.
True. He can't talk back. Okay, so Aftershock has a mix of... Oh, my God. They're doing Harry Potter stuff? Holy shit.
Well, not Harry Potter, but like Harry Potter themed.
As a mix of Harry Potter and Chronicles of
Narnia. Yeah, so I saw this preview while I was huffing paint.
Always the best way to start something.
I've been spray painting all day. If you want more, tweet us and I'll show you what I spray paint. Or follow me on Instagram at Empty Pages Draws.
Yeah, so one of the books that's coming out in called December. Backways. Yeah, Backways by Justin Jordan and Eleonora, or yeah,
Eleonora Carlini.
Okay, I'm making sure I said that right.
Colorist Sylvie Tidy and letter Marshall Dillon.
Justin Jordan's done Strayer and Green Lantern New Guardians, and Eleonora Carlini's done Batgirl and Doctor Who. So there's a hidden nation, a nation of magic and madness, one that exists in all the forgotten spaces, your basement, your attic, the haunted house down the street. Any one of those might be a part of the Backways. And America lost someone in the Backways, she'll stop at nothing to get them back, even if it means unleashing something unimaginable.
So the preview for this starts with Anna, her friend, gets dragged into another world through a magical mirror by like these demonic little children.
I love the art.
Yeah, I mean, this looks so cool. I'm like,
she looks like she's ready to fucking throw down in the cover.
Yeah. So I love Justin Jordan. He did such great stuff on Green Lantern. And I was reading through this. God, I'm like, this book is for me.
Oh my God. Yeah. I love this already. Just scrolling through all the previews. I'm just like, this looks cool.
Yeah. And just Sylvia, when she gets dragged through the mirror, all you hear is, "We see you." And I'm like, yes, this is me. This is my kind of shit. Magical world. People going through a portal.
I feel like we're starting to get more really, really good magic and like horror styled books as of late.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm like, I'm absolutely going to pick up this.
So
I'm actually write it down so I don't forget about it too.
Backways. Newsarama has a 6-page preview of it. And yeah, it's just a
fucking gorgeous book.
So the whole premise, it's a brand new series of magic, mystery, and mayhem that is sure to appeal to fans of Harry Potter and Chronicles of Narnia. And when I was looking at it, I'm like, this is Chronicles of Narnia if it went wrong.
Yeah.
Someone disappears and now they have to go to the other magical world to go rescue
them. I mean, hell, you can even picture this as like a Harry Potter story. Like some student goes through a magic mirror that they shouldn't have touched and then it's up to their friends to get them out of this dimension.
Yep. I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm excited for this. And it's Aftershock. Like, Aftershock is doing such an amazing job creating all these diverse stories that I feel like even Image, like, they're pretty much on par with Image in terms of, like, the amount of weird stories you can get.
Yeah.
Because you have this alternate history thing with Rough Riders, with Teddy Roosevelt and all that. You have Animosity, which is Disney gone wrong. And
insects.
All that. Yeah, insects. Like, there's such a wide range of books out there for them. They're doing a really good job of just getting good writers and artists.
Yeah, I was talking about label. It with John Rink when we were in line at HOJ, and we were just kind of like, yeah, what are you reading? What kind of indie stuff are you reading? I was telling him I was dropping a lot of my Marvel stuff just to read more indie. He's like, yeah, you know, I'm kind of in the same boat. I need like DC and Marvel and just going to go indie other than his spiders. So I did go back and find this quote from Jimmy Palmiotti. So this was in a backup from Flintstones Booster Gold. Family man George, his wife Jane, daughter Judy, a social butterfly, Elroy, who loves robot tech, Astro the family pooch, and Rosie the robot, who is now programmed with the consciousness of George's mother. We looked at where we are in the world now and where we will be in a couple hundred years, where technology is going to take us, where the planet's going to throw us for a loop, and also the idea of George's mother and what happens when people are faced with the end of life and what they might be able to do. Nothing in the book is too abstract. Everything in there is talked about now. Now, I do love science, and I love the idea of tomorrow and what tomorrow is going to bring. So the upgrade from being grandma to becoming Rosie just seems like such a natural thing. We were laughing when we came up with the idea, because what a hell that is. That your mother never leaves you, and she becomes your robot maid, but it's also sweet.
Huh. Seems like they're going for a dark humor sort of route with it.
Yeah, so here's the part from DC All Access when they interviewed Palmiotti. The Jetsons grapple with a threat from the darkest corner of the galaxy.
Nice.
Yep, that's the only information we know other than the 6-page backup. So the joke was, which we didn't do, that the Flintstones are below the Earth and Jetsons are above in the same time frame. So there's your cyberpunk that they decided not to do. The things that fall off the buildings above fall on the Flintstones, but they didn't like that idea. If we did 10 years of Jetsons comics, I think the last issue would be everything colliding and falling from the sky, and we just see the ground up and all of the sudden Flintstones theme would come on. It would just be the Earth starting over again.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. So, Palmiotti does go on to say, "We're going to focus on what makes them tick as a family and what makes them unique, but the world setting around them gives us tons of stories. Hopefully, people like what we set up." And that's pretty much it. So, yeah. I mean, that's... I just can't wait. It just seems like so ridiculous. So,
yeah.
So I'm moving forward with it.
Yeah. I'll give it a read. Or I'll give the first issue a read at least. It's yeah. Not trade wait for it.
Mm-hmm. So moving forward, Pokemon Sun and Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, which comes out next month, are going to be the last in the series on 3DS. The Nintendo 3DS is dying. Like
they're trying to finally kill it.
Yeah, I mean, they finally stopped production on the 3DS itself. They rebranded to the 2DS XL, the new 2DS XL, which is still...
Fuck Nintendo's naming schemes.
So, I mean, the original 2DS was just like the tablet thing.
Yeah.
Now it's still a foldable, portable system.
So they literally just took the 3D out of
it. Yeah, they just took the 3D out and then enlarged the screen.
One thing everybody did anyway.
Yeah, and I was kind of looking at them, like humoring myself. I'm like... I really like this orange and white one.
You don't need it.
I know. It's like every time a new Pokemon game comes out, I do trade out my 3DS to match with the current theme. But they are releasing a Pokeball 3DS, and I'm like, oh,
no. No, don't do it.
I managed to sell all my 3DSs.
You don't need it. You don't need it.
Yeah. Sadly, Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon are not coming out on Switch, but they did announce that they are working on a Pokemon RPG for the Switch. But hey, I mean, right now...
Will it be the Pokemon Colosseum sequel that everybody wants?
Or the Shadow... What was it called? Shadow of Lugia? No, that was the cards.
No, I think it was the last one was Pokemon Colosseum. But yeah. The really edgy guy, and he had an Umbreon.
Yeah, with all the Shadow Pokemon, you're right.
Yeah.
I think eventually that's where we're going to move forward to, finally.
Finally, the one thing everybody wants. Like, there's a goddamn Pokemon MMO somebody made just to satisfy that.
But, I mean, we're in a space right now. Like, I know you don't play Pokemon anymore. But, like, the graphics are amazing. We're not looking at just, like, little anime chibi people. Like, they look like normal anime people now.
Well, yeah, I mean, the last one I played was X.
But it's even better than X.
It was Y.
It doesn't matter. Same well, yeah, generation.
I mean, you're only playing on a 240p screen. But it's like so much.
Yeah. So it's really cool. And I mean, even Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, they're adding new Pokemon between generations. This is the first time that's ever happened. Granted, they're the Ultra Beasts or whatever, but it's like, holy shit, new Pokemon.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it makes sense that this is going to be the last one they put on Switch, like close out this 3DS. Chapter. Or yeah, 3DS.
Yeah.
I mean, they have it, like, everyone's so confused by, like, why are they still putting out 3DS games? Well, they have the install base. Like, yeah. There's millions of 3DSs out in the market.
And granted, most of those sales do go to Japan.
Yeah.
But there are still people out there that play their 3DS. Mm-hmm. Great. My 3DS is a Fire Emblem Pokemon console. That's all I use it for. And now that Nintendo's realizing it's like...
They're delaying until they can get more Switches out in the wild.
Yeah, and they are in the wild now. They're finally at a point where production meets demand.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I'll be curious to see if they're like out of stock during holiday season.
Yeah. I'll keep my eye out.
I will not be surprised if it's the top seller. Mm-hmm. Like, it just makes sense.
What Nintendo needs to do is release goddamn, like, controller covers. So, like, granted, I like the blue and red Switch.
I mean, you can get custom Joy-Cons.
But they're, like, $150.
Yeah, but they look cool.
They do look cool. But I'm not spending $150. And that's not counting shipping.
I mean, you've paid $150 on controllers before.
But I have the controller already. And the controller is an upgradable thing.
Yeah.
Great, like $60 controller versus the Elite controller for $100. I think I paid $90 for it because it was on. I did a price match on Amazon, but like, it's a moddable controller. I'm not paying three Switch games worth of money for two controllers.
I'd probably do it.
Just, you're the worst.
Yeah, I am that person. I'm just gonna throw more money at it.
Yeah, and what's really cool, too, about the Switch is, like, Nintendo finally seems like they're getting their head out. And it's like, all right, this is no longer going to be, like, we still want to be family friendly, and we still want to be Nintendo, but we're going to open up development for other people. Because Sony is developing a game for the Switch.
I think they finally realized, is like, all right, if we want this to thrive, we have to bring in more developers that actually want to support this device. Like, indies obviously have been thriving on this system, which is...
It's amazing.
My one concern is what happens when there's just so many indie games out on the eShop that sales start to fall a little bit. Like, will developers start to be a little skeptical on it? Or I mean, at that point, you would hope that it's a proven successful system that you shouldn't have to worry, even if the sales aren't exactly as big as you would originally want.
Right.
No, it'll be an interesting trend to watch.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the games that are coming out on Switch 2, there's Mario, there's a Metroid game eventually.
Yeah, I'm going to say probably won't be out till 2019. We might see something of it in 2018, though.
Yeah, there's the couple Square games coming out, like Project Octopath and a few others.
Like, seriously, like, if Atlus create, like, whatever they do, the, like, bundled... the re-release of Persona 5, if they put that on Switch, I am immediately going out and buying a Switch just to play that. Even though I know we have two PS4s in the house with a copy of Persona 5, it's like, that just seems like a really good game on the Switch.
Yeah.
Like, it's not too complicated. You can do it in little bits here and there.
Or just marathon it.
Yeah, you could do that as well.
Yeah. Let's see. Right now in 2017, we still have... So Sonic Mania is coming out.
Is that NBA not games. Out yet?
Or no, Sonic Mania is out. Sonic Forces.
Oh, yeah. The one everyone's like, ew. Mania was way better.
Xenoblade is still coming out. Rocket League is still coming out. Skyrim on
Switch. These are all the Switch releases.
Yeah.
Doom's supposed to come out this year on Switch.
Ever Oasis comes out next year. Like I said, our Metroid game, Fire Emblem, a new Mario and Luigi game. And it's like, all these titles are coming out, and it's going to be awesome.
There is going to be that lull period.
Yeah.
Because Nintendo's just been like, all right, here's another major release, another major release, another major release. Oh, crap, we used all our titles.
But this is what's so great about, like, the indie games thriving. Like, Stardew Valley, I've basically been playing this entire time. Golf Story is amazing. And it's like, these are games that would have flown so far under my radar if it weren't for the Switch. And I mean, it's so great. And now they're opening their arms up to other developers. I really do hope we get some stuff. There's a Shin Megami Tensei live stream tomorrow for the Switch. Ooh. So it's like, ooh, what are they going to announce?
Oh my God, that could be Persona 5. No.
It will not be Persona 5.
It won't be that early. The game's not even a year old.
No.
There will be a time where Persona 5 is literally everywhere, just like Persona 4 was.
Minecraft this holiday season, Rocket League, new Shovel Knight, Kirby Battle Royale, a game called Sushi Striker, Wolfenstein 2, Super Meat Boy Forever, a new Radiant Historia game. It's like all these really mainstay.
Is Secret of Mana getting a Switch release? Or is that just PS4?
Exclusive? I think that might be PS4.
Okay.
Yeah, like, all these games are coming out again, and it's like, shit. I really want to play Fire Emblem right now, even though it's just another Dynasty Warriors clone. But right. It's like, do I want to pay $40 or $60, however much it is right now, when I still have all of Stardew Valley, all of Golf Story, all of Disgaea? Like, I really want to make an effort of not buying new games until I at least finish one.
Yeah, I feel you there. Also, there's like... there's all these games coming out, and I'm just kind of like, I don't know. The biggest problem is there's so many multiplayer games coming out. I'm like, I don't need any more multiplayer games right now.
I want single-player games.
Yeah.
But single-player games are dying. They're supposedly, a dying race.
Supposedly they're dying.
Yeah. Do you want to read this one?
Yeah, sure. This is probably one of the biggest news stories from... when was this announced? I want to say it wasn't Friday.
It was earlier this week.
Yeah, it was like Monday or Tuesday. But EA is shutting down Visceral Games, the studio behind games like Battlefield Hardline and Dead Space, the publisher said. And this article is from Jason Schreier of Kotaku, who is pretty well-known, reputable games journalist. The Star Wars game in development at Visceral, will be revamped and moved to a different studio, EA says, although it will now be something completely different. And a lot of people's speculation is they're trying to mimic a Destiny kind of game, which would be, in my opinion, would be kind of dumb since they're already trying to do that with Anthem. And it's this whole, it seems that everyone's seen how successful games as a service are. But at the same time, it's oversaturating the market. It's like, there's no way you can play all of them. You just can't.
No.
Which it's, I feel like that's affecting your sales. It's like people are going to stay with that one game that's, if it's properly updated, it's going to give them more and more hours of content. And they're just
going
to stay.
But do you know
with
the biggest thing? You can't sell microtransactions in single player games.
If any other studios have tried this year with Forza, freaking Shadow of War, what else? Gran Turismo.
But with like Forza, Gran Turismo, those are season passes for other cars.
But there's still microtransactions. And the biggest issue with this whole microtransaction thing is they're taking away aspects of the game that were previously there, which is the biggest issue everybody has. It's not the fact that the loot boxes exist, because Overwatch has proven it's like, all right, it's all cosmetic stuff. You get them in game pretty easily.
But Shadow of War, you know, unfortunately, is not that case. It's like, yeah, you can buy weapons in this game. Did you hear the Activision?
Yes, the patent.
Yep.
Which I understand that it's a patent. They're not just, it's not in any games currently, but yeah, I'm just reading it. It's just like, that sounds fucking stupid.
So for you guys that don't know, just quick little things from the article that Kotaku reported also. Activision applied for a patent in 2015 and got it fully under their control in 2017, and it's a way for research and a way for them to affect matchmaking in games, where people who are spending money on the game, buying microtransactions, are going to be linked with lesser players, you know, our free-to-play people.
To make them feel like their purchase was worth it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, hey, this gun's really good now that I bought it.
Yep.
And then you go into an actual match, and like, oh, wow, this thing's actually fucking terrible.
Yep. Or in the same vein, like the junior novice players are like, wow, that player is so great, I need that gun, and then they spend the money on it. Mm-hmm. And then they get matched with people where their weapon is actually going to be more effective against the other team. And it's like, wow, that's some shit. And like I said, like, or at least like you said, it's not going into place, it's just a patent to kind of like ease it in. But like, think about how much that's gonna fuck with multiplayer ecosystems.
Oh yeah, like Greg Miller from Kind of Funny has been stating it for pretty much this entire fall release season of, this is the year that everybody's gonna fuck up these microtransaction things, because all these big publishers, they're trying to keep studios up, and games are just getting more expensive to make, and they're realizing single player isn't a valuable, or not valuable, not but not as marketable. And it doesn't, like, because most people, they play the game once, they're done, they never spend another dime on that game. Mm-hmm. Unlike multiplayer, where if you keep giving them incentives to keep giving them money, they'll, one, they have to keep the servers up and everything, but I don't know. But one of the biggest things about this Star Wars game that was in development was it was being directed by Amy Hennig, who was a longtime director on the Uncharted series, which is why people were super excited about that project.
And if anything, it's like, I understand that there's going to be a trial period where they're going to be moving people across their studios. The new Star Wars game is going to go over to EA Vancouver, famous for NBA, NFL, FIFA.
Oh, boy.
And I'm like, oh, dude, we're going to get our Star Wars fucking whatever
what
game.
Star Wars sports do?
Pod racing.
Oh, God. A pod racing game's coming.
Force Power Jedi basketball. Whatever. Gang fights. Who knows? But it's like, if they do Mover, and it's like, well, okay, we still want a really linear game, I doubt it.
I don't think it's going to be that anymore.
I mean, if they were going to take that title and move it, why not just give it to BioWare, who has a track record of making linear story-based Star Wars games?
Probably because they saw what happened with the last BioWare studio that wasn't working on.
Right.
They probably want
for Mass Effect Andromeda.
They probably want BioWare to focus on Anthem, because they're really hoping that one makes up for all the Mass Effect drama.
And there's also, you know, there's them accidentally announcing Dragon Age 4 with the director leaving. And it's like, this will not affect any development on Dragon Age. And people are like, oh, Dragon Age
got announced. Good. Good thing that's still a work in progress there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I was talking to Tim about this in line because I can't remember what brought it up. But, I imagine it was the same exact topic of, I think we might see a decline in AAA studio single player games, but you're still going to have like the Naughty Dogs, who those studios really well known for their story driven games. Like, I don't think those are going away, but I think that we'll see a decline in that. I honestly feel like this might be the rise of the AA game again. Yeah. Like, I mean, that was one of the goals that the studio behind Hellboy wanted to do. It's like, we want to create this AAA quality game, but it's a little shorter, so it's a more condensed and linear and it's a very compact experience of like 6 to 10 hours.
Right, and that was like the same vein of when during the Xbox 360 age of the arcade. It's like, yeah, here's where indies can live, here's where other games can live. And I'm kind of sad that when the Xbox One came out, they got rid of the arcade, because I don't know what other small titles.
Well, there was ID at Xbox, but they're, I feel like they've done a kind of a bad job of pushing stuff like that. Like, honestly, the Switch has done like probably way better than that has.
Yeah, I mean, the Switch has like an indie section of their store, and they also like, there's the mainstay Nintendo characters and titles, and then here's some other games you can play, you know, games that came out already on other systems. But it's like, you know, Nintendo is finally realizing people like this thing. People want, and, you know,
people want game. It was, it's great. Again, it's Greg Miller of Kinda Funny's dream of what the Vita could have been with all these games that people want to buy on it.
And there are certain games where I'm like, I love my Xbox, I love achievements, but this would be a really good Switch game.
Yeah.
Because it is technically my secondary console. I'm like, this would be a great Switch game. I'm going to wait for this to come out on Switch.
Yeah, and see, I've shifted more to like my PC has almost become my main console. The only reason I'm using my Xbox right now is Destiny. And that's because that's where all my friends are playing it.
Yeah. But hey, Destiny comes out this Wednesday.
Yep, on PC.
Yep. Oh, God. So. And then there's something about, what was it, Destiny's seasons are changing?
Yeah, so Jim actually brought this up to us yesterday. So shout out to you, Jim. It's also from Kotaku. But Bungie's, they're shifting over from their dev team to their live team for content updates. So they're going to be shifting into a season style of content to try and, you know, make the game feel more rewarding than it is currently. Because the biggest problem is that, like, okay, you get gear, but there's no stats that you're trying to get on a gun, so it's like you just get all the things. Like, there's this dumb totem system. Like, Iron Banner was literally just the control game mode with an Iron Banner skin pasted over it. There was no level advantage, guns. It was just literally just regular PvP that you could get Iron Banner.
Yeah, and stuff. They actually postponed trials for 2 weeks. Yep, to
because
fix
there's
glitches.
Another fucking glitch. Like, I don't know what's going on, but there's so many glitches in this game. Like, there was the whole world first for prestige hard mode that was like, oh, congratulations to this group for getting it. Oh, wait, what? They used the glitch that we told people not to do for world first? Well, shit. Well, this is awkward. But anyway, so this was out. Where was this panel? This was. Oh, this was actually at TwitchCon yesterday. So. This is what came away from the panel. So there will be 4 seasons in the first year of Destiny 2. We're currently in Season 1. They didn't say when Season 2 will begin, but there will be at least one more Iron Banner and Faction Rally before Season 2. Seasons will reset your clan progress, so everyone starts at zero. Yeah, not a huge deal. It was kind of expected. Let's see what else. So season turnovers will also be where Bungie makes larger tweaks to weapon balance, introduces new content. There will be very few specifics on what the content might look like, naturally. They said they're still planning to push out weapon balance tweaks as needed during the seasons, But the start of the season sounds like it'll where the biggest meta changes will take place. So they're adding ornaments to Trials, Iron Banner, and Faction Rally gear in Season 2. Woo.
I mean, it's smart of them to go into seasons. I mean, look at what Overwatch has done, where Overwatch has become a competitive mainstay game.
Right.
And even Halo has seasons, but they also do, like, the professional tournament seasons.
Yeah. So another thing is weapons will change from season to season as well. So in terms of, like, rewards for, like, Faction Rally and stuff, but that's good. Okay, that's finally nice. They're actually bringing actual cool exotic, like, ships and stuff that actually look exotic. Because that was another complaint. It was like, oh, this is just a recolored ship of just a green one. Neat.
Oh, Overwatch.
Yeah. what else is there? It seems like they'll start hopefully taking a step in the right direction, because it just seems... My biggest problem with Destiny is it seems so bland right now.
I mean, like, once you finish everything in Destiny, there's nothing else to do.
Yeah, it's like, if you fit, cool. I mean, you can go do PvP, but okay, yay. Like, even the hard mode raid, it's like, after you do it once, there's really no point in doing it ever again.
Right.
Like, there's no extra gear or anything. There's no special shader or anything to get for that. Like, if you have the, like, raid shotgun, you just gotta beat it once for the last perk you get unlocked for, and then that's it. There's no other point in running prestige mode. So, I don't know. It seems like it's weird. Like, I've talked to Steve about this too, and it's like, Destiny 2 is a better starting point than Destiny 1 was, but it's not where Destiny Year 3 ended. Which, that seemed... Aside from, like, a lot of the PvP balance issues there was, Destiny Year 3 was actually pretty damn good in terms of, like, mm-hmm. content available and everything to do.
So, yeah.
I don't know. It just seems like they took a big step back, which kind of makes sense since they started development before Taken King came out. But even then, you would think that the teams would talk to each other. And it's like, all right, where are you guys headed? Where can we, like, try to implement some of that stuff before the game's out?
Yeah, and... I mean, when Overwatch first launched, I think their live team was about 20 people. And just because of the dedicated fan base, I think they have like 100 people working now. And that's like, character tweaks, like new events and everything else. Like, they brought back the Halloween event recently. Yep. And they added new characters to the event. Like,
Symmetra. A little bit.
Yeah. And which is really cool concept and thought, and it's like, oh, that's neat. But it's like, one of my big problems with Destiny was, and granted, I never finished either of them.
You try.
I tried. We officially broke up. And one of my big things is, like, once I got to a specific point, there's no more replayability for me. Like, oh, I could just do another character, but it's like, I'm replaying the same events.
Yeah, it's different from, like, an MMO where it's like, all right, this is a completely different experience now that I'm playing on a different character.
No, I have the same gun, and
it's literally the same thing.
Three new powers.
It's like, ooh. I can now dodge.
I can be Palpatine.
Ooh.
Yeah, so a lot of Destiny has always been that for me. And it's like, you know, you guys told me, it's like, hey, once you get past the grindy stuff and you play with us, it'll be great. And I'm like, I don't want to do this.
It is fun with actual friends and just having that group to go around and do stuff with. But if you don't have that, it's just pretty bland.
Yeah. And, you know, granted, we grew up in the age of, you know, Xbox Live first starting in, you know, when we were like 12. And it's like, yeah, Halo, you play through the campaign once, you never touch the campaign again, you still play multiplayer. Mm-hmm. But even then, the multiplayer back from like the Halo days was tons of fun, and I just can't get into the PvP for Destiny.
Oh man, I hate PvP is my least favorite thing in Destiny.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all about, now even more, since they made it to 4v4, one, everybody has to carry their own weight, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but if you have a bad game, it's just, or if somebody's doing really bad on your team, it's like, oh, this isn't even fun.
Right.
Because we're just getting rolled. And if you don't have the right weapons, you just get destroyed constantly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just not fun.
Yeah.
It's like, the only reason I do is just to get the weakest rewards out of it.
Yeah. And I think hopefully, like, moving into seasons will be better. and maybe they will put out more of like these kind of big events. Because I know when you guys were like, oh man, we're getting ready for Trials, we're getting ready for Iron Banner, you guys were so pumped like about the armors and everything.
Yeah, but then it's like, oh yeah, how many because you had there was someone who said you have to get 57 it took him 57 packages to get the entire armor set.
Wow.
And to put that into perspective, you need 20 tokens to get a single package. So, and you get 5 for winning, but only 2 for losing. And I lost a lot. I won 5 whole matches in Iron Banner.
Right.
Because it's all just a 4 stack of clans versus just a bunch of randoms. Like, oh yeah, no shit, we're going to get rolled here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, it just wasn't even fun. And it's just like the rewards aren't, it's just, okay, it's cool looking armor. Woo. Nothing special about it.
And I mean, that's kind of where I was at with Overwatch. Like, I love Overwatch. It was a really fun game, but I can't play that game by myself like you do.
It has a really, I mean, I'd take breaks from it, especially like right now. It's just, the meta is just so bad. Mercy's just, like, they tried to fix Mercy by moving the whole anti-fun, like, oh, look at that quad res. Everything we just did was nulled. But now with the single res, it's like Mercy's 100% pick rate. If you don't have a Mercy, you pretty much lose.
Right.
Ana is useless, essentially, because her damage, she can't protect herself against Winston anymore. It's like, all right, so we either need another healer that changes something, or you need to buff one of the other healers and nerf Mercy a little bit more.
That just doesn't sound fun to me right now. Like, I'm having the time of my life playing a single-player game again.
Yeah, like, I'm too. I'm fucking replaying Witcher 3 again because that game is just so great.
Yeah, I remember you talking to Ryan about it, and Ryan's like, 140 hours? God.
I'm like, yeah, I'm ready to do it again.
Yeah, I mean, like, Ryan and Eric, they're both, like, Nintendo boys. So they're like, oh, cool, 20, 30 hours? Good. And I'm like, dude, I've just been playing Stardew Valley.
You don't know the satisfaction.
Ryan's like, I just don't get Stardew Valley. Like, you farm? Like, do you anything else?
Get it.
I'm like, yeah, you fight monsters, but it's just, like, a really chill thing. Like, it's a really great way for me just to wind down and just use my time management skills. But, I mean, in all honesty, a lot of these multiplayer games are not necessarily turning me off or away, but it's like I'm looking for something new.
I don't think they're doing enough different to draw me in.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I realize episode 2 for Life is Strange Before the Storm just came out. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so behind on that.
I'm waiting for all 3 to be out.
Yeah. And it's like, I really want to have like that. I just want a storytelling experience for my video games again. Mm-hmm. Not.
Well, and I don't think those are going away. Like, we might see, like, it shift more to all these games as a service, but I feel like eventually it's going to swing back to big, grandiose narrative stories again.
We can hope.
We'll give it time.
Just give it time. I don't want to give it time.
Well, if anything, we have plenty of, like, indies and Kickstarter projects that are good single-player games.
Golf Story is fucking amazing.
Still need to play Divinity as well.
Original Sin.
Mm-hmm.
2.
I haven't bought
the most
yet,
original
so.
Sin. Yeah.
The second sin.
So, before we wrap up, really quick, what have you been reading this week? That's just been, it blew you out of the water, maybe.
Hmm. Was that a segue to The Drown?
The goddamn Drown, Zach. It was the only comic I managed to read this week just because I was so busy.
I read Batman because I wanted to see Rules of Engagement. God, the scene with Alfred explaining it to all of the Robins, I'm like, I don't think I've ever seen Damian cry like that before.
Probably.
Like, it's also weird that they're all convinced that Bruce is going to just straight up be murdered.
I mean, Bruce has a track record of bad relationships.
Yeah.
But so reading The Drown, and it's just so cool to see like this general theme going up between each of the Dark Knights.
Also, can I point out, I was fucking right on what they did with it.
What?
Gender swap Bruce.
Yeah. Also, did you notice Sylvester Kyle, right?
Yes.
Sylvester is also the name of the cat in Looney Tunes.
Yep.
Pun games. But, so that takes place in Earth 11 where all the heroes are gender swapped already. So it only made sense.
Yeah.
Like negative 11. But it's so cool. Like thematically, it's like each thing Bruce loses drives him over the edge. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, Bruce loses his lover. Bruce loses Alfred. Bruce loses the boys. And it's like, oh, God, we still have, like, three more. We
still have the Wonder Woman one.
The Superman one. The Merciless, the Doomed, and the Batman Who Laughs.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, God, what else is he going to lose? What can he lose still? Mm-hmm. And it's just been really entertaining to look at all these different stories and just go like, fuck.
Theory for the Wonder Woman one, he loses his home. Because that's always been a big point for
Losing Wonder Gotham Woman. Itself.
Yeah, just Gotham's just wiped off the map by like the Amazons or something.
Yeah, it could be like an alternate Flashpoint story.
Yeah.
So just reading The Drowned and just like seeing this incarnation of Bruce go to the huge extremes because, the Atlanteans come and Bruce is like, no, we need to go to war. Mm. This is like...
Where he was like, I was always skeptical of them and then they proved me right.
This is the Bruce that we see in, not Dark Knight, in Batman versus Superman. If there's a 1% chance.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but what drove him over the edge? It's like, we only see Aquaman.
Yeah, we keep seeing.
There is no Superman in this universe.
And she just kept mentioning, you got Sylvester killed.
Yeah.
It's like, how does it feel to lose your everything you loved?
So it's just really interesting to see all these small little things. It's like, this is the Bruce that is isolated and alone. It really reminds me of like the Titans Tomorrow, Tim Drake. And even better, in the December crossover for Super Sons, Teen Titans and Superman, we see Connor Kent come back. We see Bart Allen of the future. We see Cassie of the future. These are all the Titans Tomorrow characters. And I'm like, holy shit, this is another step closer to bringing back what we were missing this entire time. And it's like, just to see all these different kind of transitions, all these what ifs happening. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the freaking ball dropping where Tim's like, who the hell is Connor? I'm like, that hurt me physically because that was like one of the most important relationships. It's the same thing of like if Dick, and when Rebirth happened, when mm-hmm. Wally tries to go to Dick and he's like, who are you? I don't know you. And it's like, no.
Yeah. Well, that seems to be the whole theme of Rebirth is, yeah, we're bringing the whole universe back, but at, like, first glance when it started, it's like, oh, look, all these characters are back, and now we're actually getting into the weeds of it, of
mm-hmm.
what pieces are missing that's going to lead up to Doomsday Clock and that whole big reveal.
Yeah, and, you know, to be perfectly honest, I would love to see Bruce actually marry Selina.
Yes.
Like, them having
Please,
a happy ending.
Let them have some goddamn happiness for once, which is what Tom King said. He's like, you know, Bruce has had such a rough life. I just want to bring some love into his joy to him for once.
Yeah, and I mean, if we do eventually just keep going and it's like, oh, Bruce and Selina have a child. Here's little Helena Wayne. It's like,
oh my fucking God.
Oh my God, Damian please. Has to be a big brother.
Oh my God, please.
It's super cool seeing all this
stuff.
That's
such a cool story to see.
Yeah, and I mean, this aspect of love and emotion in the DC universe has been so cool. Like, the best thing that has happened to Superman in the past 7 years from when Flashpoint started was the fact that he and Lois are married and have a child. That's, like, the one thing that I'm like, this is, like, the best change ever. And then we're in this weird space of, like, okay, you're asking who the hell is Connor, but you had a Superboy on your Titans team this entire time, Tim mm-hmm. Drake. So what's going on? And it's like, God, what is happening? And like you said, Rebirth is bringing everything back, but they've been doing it in such small little chunks that I really appreciate and really enjoy. It's like, they're not going to overwhelm you. Kind of like what Marvel did. All new, all different. Everyone's back. All right, Legacy, everyone's back. I'm like, but why?
Yeah.
Why is Logan back?
Yeah, we've seen like everything kind of pay off in the from like we still get hint like things that mattered in the first arc mm-hmm. that was told. Like, especially with Detective, like, every story arc for Detective has built on each itself.
Yeah.
So it could just accelerate the story.
Mm-hmm.
And even Batwoman got involved with the whole future Batman story with Tim.
God, it's like James Tynan and freaking Marguerite
Bennett.
It's
like they're best friends or something. Yeah. And they talk to each other.
It's like they were both trained by master writer Scott Snyder. It was funny when I was going through my Facebook, I'm like, back in 2012, I said Scott Snyder's the best thing DC has going for them right now. And look where we're fucking at right now. And it's like Dark Knight's Metal, All-Star Batman.
Which, that we're done with it, right?
Yeah, 14 was the last issue. So it's like, crap, now we have to wait for Snyder's last Batman story for a while and then see what else he's going to do. Even freaking Robinson writing Wonder Woman right now is payoff from Darkseid War. Everything is just building on each other. And I'm like, I'm so appreciative of the fact that we're returning to the roots while still keeping the whole concept of legacy, who these people mean to each other. It makes the world feel so much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's Marvel. I'm kidding. We're not going to talk about Marvel. So I've really been digging Drowned. The whole Dark Knight's Metal thing is awesome. Merciless comes out this week.
Yeah, I brought it up to John, too. I really appreciate that they're using all of the character writers for this. I think I might have mentioned this before. But like Dan Abnett doing the Drowned story. It's like he brought in Deadwater from his story.
That wasn't even him. That was Jeff Parker, I think.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
No, it was Dan Abnett who did the Drowned or the Deadwater thing.
Well, Deadwater was one of the first arcs, but Deadwater has appeared before
his
run.
Okay.
I think it was Jeff Parker first brought him, and that's when he had Brett Booth drawing, I think. I'll look it up.
Okay. But yeah, I mean, it was just cool. Like, oh, hey, that's pretty neat. That's like you took a pretty recent story element and modified it to, oh, look, this is the Batwoman Aqua... The Bat Aqua Woman is, or actually, let me restart that. The Aqua Bat Woman was like pretty much just dead on the inside.
No, you're right. It was Dan Abnett who made him.
Okay. It was literally, I mean, she used Deadwaters as her army and then corrupted Mara as well.
And think about the Rebirth run for, you know, they're on the island. There's a dark portal where the Deadwater is. And I'm like, holy shit, was that a rift to the dark multiverse right there?
Oh, shit.
That, you know, Aquaman tries to
very well could have been.
Yeah, and it's like, god damn it.
Even though they said it was just like a protector of it, but I don't know.
Got some Pacific Rim vibes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like you said, having the writers do it, like Joshua Williamson doing Red Death. And it's like, oh, Barry's still there. Fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Humphrey's doing Dawnbreaker, and then my theory of like, yeah, no, Dawn. So Parallax originally corrupted the Green Battery. What if it was Necron that did it, and that's why we have the black energy from the ring, and that's why it broke? And everyone's looking at me. It's like, you're kind of crazy. I'm like, no,
I'm right. I'm fucking right here.
Zach is right. 2018. We're gonna keep going.
Yeah. I mean, anyways, you didn't even fucking stop the trend with Blade Runner.
Saw two trailers.
God, I was so fucking pissed that you did that.
Saw two trailers.
Oh my god.
I'm so good at this
game. I'm just glad I didn't watch the second trailer.
You know the scene where he goes up to the giant holographic woman?
Yes.
No CGI.
Really?
It was all perspective, which was really cool.
How the fuck did they shoot that?
Well, no, it wasn't CGI. It was literally a projector.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah. Sorry. That was like just one of the cool things I saw.
I wasn't worried about that. It's like this is a really well done scene if this is CGI.
Yeah. Anything else you want to talk about reading wise?
Not really. I'm still behind on reading stuff this week.
Yeah. Me too.
I have a big stack still.
Me too. also early views for Ragnarok came out and it's
apparently the funniest Marvel movie.
I think the first couple of days, it was like a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I'm like, yeah, fucking Taika Waititi. What did I tell you people? It's going to be the best thing ever. Mm-hmm. I mean, his brand of humor is just so unique. And having it be more widespread is exactly what we need.
Yeah, I mean, I've read a little bit of like what people are saying about it. And it's like, you go into a Marvel movie, you know what it is, and you know what to expect. And that's what the movie does for you. It's like, it's a giant parody of other Marvel movies.
98% on Rotten Tomatoes right now.
Nice.
Yep. So I'm pretty hyped. Comes out next week. We should go get a screening for
it. Is it really coming out next week?
November 3rd.
Shit.
Next weekend.
Woo.
Woo-hee. Also, in Thor 700 this week, you know how Jason Aaron loves, like, all right, here's the beginning of the arc, and here's all the shit that's going to happen in the next 30 mm-hmm. issues. So we see Jane Foster on the ground. We see Odinson with a golden arm and a new hammer. We see Volstagg, and I'm like, we see Loki with the Infinity Gauntlet. I'm like, God, that's the last person that needs that.
Yeah. Like, fuck Thanos having it. Fuck, I don't know, Captain America or Iron Man having it. No, Loki. He just fucks everything up.
And already. if you read Marvel Legacy, he did try to get one of the gems. And
of course he did.
Ended up in the hands of Logan, who's alive. And it's like...
Bub.
So it makes me wonder. I'm like, okay, I think Jason Aaron is going to go write the next big story arc for Marvel. It only makes sense at this point if he penned Legacy. Kind of like Johns did Rebirth and then just disappeared until Doomsday Clock.
Right.
But... I would be down for another Thor-centered event.
Yeah.
Of all, I mean, he's one of the characters, and she are one of those characters that doesn't really get too much attention, and they're kind of treated as, like, this comedic character by the rest of the Marvel Universe. But, I mean, we did a Cap story, we did an Iron Man story, we did a Captain Marvel story. Black Panther, I mean, exists.
It'd be cool for a Black Panther-focused story.
But wasn't that, like, part of Time Runs Out? Like, there's a whole Wakanda subplot.
Kind of. I mean, Time Runs Out was just kind of everything.
That was Hickman being like, yeah. I have a toy box, you don't.
Yeah, pretty much. Before I close out, I just want to talk about Blade Runner a little bit.
Okay, I'll leave.
I finally saw it. I'm not going to be spoilery at all. But I personally really loved it. Like... every scene was like a fucking work of art. Like, it was beautifully shot. All the colors were amazing. Like, I'm a sucker for cyberpunk aesthetic, so that just was, like, right up my alley. I already mentioned that I was furious when you literally called the whole plot in one paragraph. Like, beat for beat, you called the whole thing. I'm just like, how do you fucking do this over and over again? I understand why it's kind of failing at the box office, because it's not a movie for everyone. It is very, I will admit, it is a very slow movie. Ryan Gosling, like, if you've seen Drive, you know how he, like, barely says anything? That's pretty much Ryan Gosling in this movie. Like, he only says, but what's cool is he only says something that needs to be said. Like, they kind of treat the viewer of, all right, here's where we're at in the story based on what happened before. You figure out what's going to happen now based on all the context we've given so right. far.
Like, well, I mean,
it doesn't sorry. Explicitly like say like, oh, we have to go do this. It's like, okay, I understand.
Yeah, he's a replicant cop in the movie. So it only makes sense that it's like, I have to do what I'm told. And mm-hmm. There's no ifs, buts or about it. Just
yeah,
move
I mean, that's
forward.
His whole point. That's his whole existence. They even start with like text of, the Wallace Company has created new replicants that are designed to specifically obey, not unlike the previous models of the Tyrell Corp, which was the first movie.
Yep. Finally finished it.
Yeah. Also, something cool that even Tim brought up was they still don't answer if Harrison Ford was a replicant or not.
Yep.
Which is like one of the biggest plot points of the first movie. Is like, mm-hmm. was Deckard a replicant? We still don't know.
Yeah, one of the things I appreciate about Denis Villeneuve.
Yeah, he did Arrival, Sicario.
Yeah, one of the things that he said when they were writing the film, one of his big things was that he did Sicario, you're right. One of the big things was that he wanted to make a standalone Blade Runner movie. He didn't want to make it a franchise. It's just more along the lines of like, this is what's going to happen. We're going to tie up all the loose ends of our movie. We're not going to answer any questions from the previous movie. It's going to be its own standalone complex. And if it does well commercially, we'll make another one. But
I would love to see what they do after, or like what happens after this. Like, even as like another animated movie, like, just because they did leave several questions unanswered, especially like the very end. But mm-hmm. It was like that open-ended closure, right? All right, here's the end of this story. There's still more that we could tell, but this is the end of this specific character story and the plot we've presented.
Yeah. Because the from what I understand, it is a very standalone story. Like, Harrison Ford is a plot point. He's not the character for the film. It's all about Ryan Gosling's character as this police officer.
Yeah.
So
a Blade Runner.
Hampton Fancher, the writer of both the Blade Runner, the original, and 2049. So it's cool that he came back to write this. Revealed that he was considering reviving an old story idea involving Deckard traveling to another country. And Ford said he'd be open to returning if he liked the script. And it's officially made its money back.
Well, that's good.
The box office currently, it's $194.1 million. Well, it means they made a $6 million revenue, so it's
Better than what it could have been.
Yeah.
Because I don't think this movie was ever going to be a commercial success.
No, I think they tried. The original Blade Runner was a cult film.
Yeah, I mean, this one's still, like, it is an amazing, like, critically, it's, like, sitting on, like, an 88% or something. Which is good, which is really good.
Oh, their advertising budget's $300 million. Never
mind. Lord. Yeah, I think that's the problem, is they tried to market it to hell.
Oh, no. Combined production and advertising budget for $300 million.
Okay, so they're not going to make that back.
So they made their production budget back, it seems like.
I don't think they're going to make the marketing budget back.
But it's weird, because Fandango came out and said it was one of the most anticipated films for 2017. But other than being at a movie theater, I saw no mention of this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't go on YouTube without seeing a Star Wars trailer. And it's like, Why are you advertising this? People are going to go see it.
We already know people are going to see Star Wars.
Yeah. So if in its second weekend, it dropped to, it made $15.5 million, finishing second behind the newcomer Happy Death Day, which made $26 million for its box office opening, which is, for a horror movie, I mean, that's really good.
What's it with horror movies this year just kicking ass?
And I talked to someone who saw Happy Death Day yesterday, you know, just random candid conversation. They were like, yeah, it was actually really good. Scott Lobdell wrote it, and I'm like, yeah, that's weird.
That's very weird.
Apparently, it's been in, like, developmental hell since 2007. And originally, it was Michael Bay and Megan Fox.
Oh, my God. I don't think that'd be the same movie.
No, and then it's like, since it's done so well commercially, they're like, yeah, we might actually do a prequel to Happy Death Day.
Huh.
Because it's like, oh, the movie is a Groundhog's Day scenario.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to do the why that happened. And I'm like, okay, that might be cool. And it's a ton of B-list actors. And the person telling me, it's like, yeah, it was really cool. And like the whole twist behind the Groundhog's Day and the murders, it was really interesting. I'm like, see, because you said that, don't tell me there's a twist.
Yeah.
Because now I'm going to sit there. It's going to not be the most obvious answer in this movie. So I might actually go see that this weekend if you want to come.
Yeah, maybe.
And you, the audience, are not invited.
Oh, but yeah, I mean, to close out my point is, if you like kind of like crime drama, like old school noir films, that's what this essentially is in a cyberpunk dystopian city. And future, like, that's what this is. Like, there's so many like subtle things about the movie that like I sat there and like had to digest it. I'm like, okay, I got what the point of the movie was, and I really liked it. So again, it's a 3-hour movie. It is very long, and it is not the fastest movie ever. Like, it's not supposed to be like heavy on action too. There's like maybe 3 action scenes,
which are all in the trailers.
Yeah, pretty much. And like, that's not the point of the movie. Like, it's about the story and just the characters involved in this world and this story is what drives the movie.
Okay.
So if you like that kind of stuff, I think you'll like it.
Yeah, I might go see it, or at least wait for it to definitely be like a rentable movie. So it'll be cool. Yeah. I wasn't too turned on by the original Blade Runner. Like, yeah, I like cyberpunk and everything, but I mean, like, it is a product of its time.
Yeah, and it's not for everyone. It's definitely not for everyone. Like, you have to have, like, a certain taste for you to enjoy it, or, like, kind of like those slow burn movies.
I loved Arrival, but Arrival...
it's definitely different from Arrival. Like, Arrival, it's like, they start to pick up, like, here's the plot, here's what's going on. Like,
but even then, Arrival was like, man, this is the longest 85-minute movie ever.
That's true.
Fucking sitting there looking at my watch, I'm like, okay.
Are we done yet?
Yeah.
They're still doing stuff.
So that's everything, right?
Yep.
All right. So if you haven't already, make sure you pick up an issue of The Drowned. I mean, metal in its entirety is sold out of every single copy. And they've all gone to second print. Even Mr. Miracle is now being reported as the most under-ordered comic.
Oh, my God. It's so good.
So go check those out. As always, you can check us out on our Google Play, iTunes, SoundCloud, wherever you're listening. And be sure to leave us a review on where you're at.
As bad as the new iTunes podcast app is, or iOS podcast app is, apparently it's easier to write a review on there. So
yeah, take 5 minutes out of your day. Maybe you're sitting on the toilet and you're like, you know what? I want to write a shitty review because you're pooping. But you want to leave that 5-star review for us because it helps get our attention out there. Also, if you haven't, we did an awesome interview last week with Mr. Joe Vallon.
Yeah, another one planned in the next coming weeks.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, I got some lined up.
So. Okay, cool. Also, head over to HOJ Comics. They're a wonderful store, and they have all these fabulous comics that we're talking about. We were hanging out there this weekend with Stephanie Hans. It was really cool. Yeah. So I think that's everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Love you, Internet. Bye.